Chapter 9, The Source of the Source Field. Ancient human civilization may have been far more advanced than we normally believe. Our ancestors made an incredibly strong effort to get us to study the 25,920-year cycle known as the precession of the equinoxes, which was historically broken down into 12 2,160-year ages of the zodiac. The Great Pyramid of Giza also appears to have been built to alert us to this 25,920-year cycle when we measured the exact length of the diagonals in pyramid inches. The craftsmanship of the Great Pyramid is well beyond our current technological capabilities, particularly when we consider the mirror-polished white limestone casing stones that once adorned the outside. And we now know the American founding fathers combined the symbolism of the return of the capstone with mysterious passages from the Sibylline prophecies that foretold a coming golden age. These prophecies strongly indicated that we would again co-mingle with the gods as the great year comes to an end, and in fact gain such supernatural abilities on our own, so that the Golden One shall arise again in the whole earth. If we want to take the Russian discoveries seriously, we would naturally assume that equally stunning effects on matter, energy, biology, and consciousness should be achievable without any pyramids being involved. We've already explored the source field as a living, thinking form of consciousness, suggesting that we have to significantly broaden our ideas of what life really is. We share thoughts with all living things and may well continue to experience awareness while our bodies are clinically brain dead. In this chapter, we're going to begin exploring the biological aspects of the source field in much greater detail. In part 2, we'll move into the deeper mysteries of space and time that underlie the pyramid effects and their influence on physical matter. A wealth of little-known scientific data reveals the unique biological properties of the source field. A good place to start is with German scientist Hans Dreich in 1891. Dreich was examining the sea urchin, which is a unique organism in the sense that it has vegetative cells that look and behave exactly like plants do, as well as animal cells. In the earliest stages of development, the sea urchin embryo is nothing more than a hollow sphere. The vegetative cells are on the bottom half of the embryo, more or less, and the animal cells are on top. Once the embryo develops a little more, the vegetative cells roll inside and form a pocket, which becomes the gut, and the animal cells remain on the outside. In 1891, Dreich discovered that if he separated the very first two cells of a sea urchin embryo, each one produced a whole new embryo, rather than just growing into a deformed half-creature. At the time, this was considered quite a shocking and unexpected discovery. Furthermore, Dreich found he could cut the early sphere-shaped embryo into as many as 8 different pieces, and each of them would grow into a fully new embryo, even if the piece he cut out was from 100% vegetative cells with no apparent animal characteristics whatsoever. Most people would think nothing of these observations in today's world. We automatically assume that each DNA molecule has all the building codes for an organism, so you can grow a whole new life form out of a single cell. Bear in mind that this is one explanation, but it is not the only one, and it may not even be the right one. Dreich believed there was an overall guiding force that determined the growth of any one cell within an embryo. The force contains information that gives each cell instructions on what it should do, depending on where that cell is located. The force is what tells a cell whether it should become a vegetable cell or an animal cell, in the case of the sea urchin. Dreich published his key paper in 1912, and this inspired Alexander Gurvitch, a Russian scientist, to continue this research. Gurvitch believed these energy fields were not only found within the embryo, they governed and regulated the growth of fully adult life forms as well. Gurvitch also believed that all organisms were being kept alive by this mitogenetic energy field, and that they both absorbed and radiated these fields throughout their life cycle. Gurvitch explored the radiant aspect of these fields by using a growing onion. He assumed the majority of life energy would shoot out from the top of a newly sprouting onion, since that's where all the new leaves are growing. Gurvitch thus aimed the top of a sprouting onion at the side of another onion without ever actually letting them touch. Sure enough, those cells on the second onion grew much faster than the rest, forming a noticeable bump where the first onion was pointing. Interestingly, Gurvitch also found that the effect could be completely blocked by putting a piece of glass in the way, which shields infrared and ultraviolet light. However, a piece of quartz did not block the effect, and quartz allows infrared and ultraviolet to pass through. So we don't need pyramid power to get a sudden growth spurt after all. Just the life force of the onion itself is enough to have an effect on other onion cells. Gurvitch published his key paper in 1926. By this time, he had conducted several other experiments that proved a very weak but measurable ultraviolet radiation was emanating from the tip of the onion, creating his mitogenetic effect. Again, it appears that this ultraviolet light is a signature of the source field, but is not the actual source field itself. Much like the ripple in the surface of a lake from a stone you just dropped in is not the stone itself. Many Russian scientists replicated Gurvitch's classic experiment with positive results over the years, though this intriguing research got washed away in the excited speculation that genes and DNA were responsible for all the codes that build living organisms and determine their growth. Another early pioneer worth mentioning is neuroanatomist Harold S. Burr from Yale University. He discovered that even an unfertilized salamander egg had an electrical energy field that was already shaped like an adult salamander, showing a straight line of charge along the egg in the direction it would eventually grow into an adult. In plant seedlings, Burr found electrical fields that looked similar to the adult plant. Burr found these electrical fields around all different life forms. He noticed that the charge of these fields would change with growth, sleep patterns, the amount of light exposure, tissue regeneration, the presence of water, storms, the onset of cancer, and even the cycles of the moon. Furthermore, Dr. Robert Becker, an orthopedic surgeon, studied the human body's natural electrical fields and found that every person he studied had the strongest electrical charges on the Chinese acupuncture meridian points. The ancient sciences apparently have much more truth to them than many of us have been led to believe. The DNA phantom effect. Now, I want to jump ahead in time to 1984. Because this was the year our addiction to DNA was heavily challenged, if not defeated, by Dr. Peter Garyayev. Garyayev's discovery also gave us a compelling hint that Gurvitch's mitogenetic radiation, the source field, may well be operating through our DNA. Furthermore, Garyayev's discovery suggests that the complete genetic codes for an organism might not actually be found in the DNA molecule after all, at least not as their final location. When Garyayev put a sample of DNA in a tiny quartz container, zapped it with a mild laser, and then observed it with sensitive equipment that could detect even single photons of light, he found that the DNA acted like a light sponge. Somehow, the DNA molecule absorbed all the photons of light in the area and actually stored them in a corkscrew-shaped spiral. This is very, very strange. The DNA apparently created a vortex of some sort that attracted the light, not unlike the idea of a black hole, but on a much, much smaller scale. Few scientists would be willing to suggest that light could appear inside the pineal gland either. But Garyaev proved that the DNA molecule is pulling in photons from somewhere by some unknown process. Due to the difficulty of studying a living human brain, no comparable experiments like this have been done within the pineal gland, at least none that are openly available to the public. The only technology we have that could hold light in a spiral like Garyaev found in the DNA molecule is a fiber optic cable. But even then, fiber optic cables don't hungrily draw in all the light from their surroundings. We're not used to thinking of light as something that can actually be stored. It normally just zips along through space at a very nice speed. If we could even capture it in one spot, we'd probably expect that it would just wear out and lose its energy. Even in the case of photosynthesis, the only way a plant appears to be able to store light is by immediately converting its energy into green-colored chlorophyll. Now, we're seeing light itself being used like a food supply that DNA can store away, not unlike a squirrel hiding acorns in a hollowed-out tree for winter. This triggers a bunch of new questions. What exactly is storing the light? How is it being stored? And why is it being stored? In order to answer those questions, we have to delve deeper into what Garyaev actually discovered, because this is just the beginning. The real magic happened when Dr. Garyaev ended the experiment. He grabbed the quartz container with the DNA in it and moved it out of the way. Nothing more was supposed to happen. Nonetheless, to his utter amazement, even though everything was gone, the container, the DNA, you name it, the light continued spiraling along in the same space as if the DNA were still there. Whatever was holding that light in place, it did not need the DNA molecule at all. It was something else, something invisible, something powerful enough to store and control visible light within the shape of the DNA molecule itself. The only rational scientific explanation is that there has to be an energy field that is paired up with the DNA molecule, as if DNA has an energetic duplicate. This duplicate has the same shape as the physical molecule, but once we move the DNA, the duplicate still hangs around in the same spot the molecule was in before. It doesn't need the DNA molecule to be there in order for it to keep on doing its job, storing visible light. Some force, perhaps akin to gravity, is holding the photons in place. The implications of this are mind-boggling. Obviously, in the case of a human body, we have far more than one DNA molecule to consider. We have untold trillions of them in a very highly structured arrangement. We have bone DNA, organ DNA, blood DNA, muscle DNA, tendon DNA, skin DNA, nervous system DNA, and brain DNA. So just by a simple extension of Garyaev's experiment, it is very likely that our entire body must have an energetic duplicate. This fits in perfectly with what Dreich, Gurvitch, Burr, and Becker all theorized and observed. There is an information field that tells our cells what to do and where to do it. Once we add Garyaev's discovery in, we find out that perhaps the most important thing the DNA molecule does is store light, both in our physical body and in our energetic duplicate body as well. Obviously, conventional science is significantly in need of an overhaul. There is a great deal of information about biological life that we simply do not know or recognize in the mainstream sense. The DNA phantom effect is arguably one of the most significant scientific discoveries in modern history. It shows us that the DNA molecule has some bizarre relationship with quantum mechanics that our scientists have not yet discovered in the mainstream world. We now have proof that DNA is interfacing with an unseen, yet undiscovered energy field that is not electromagnetic, but which obviously can control electromagnetic energy, in this case by storing photons, even when there is no physical molecule there to hold them in place. And that's not all. When Gadeaev blasted this phantom with liquid nitrogen, which creates a sudden burst of great cold, the light spiral would disappear, but then it mysteriously returned after 5 to 8 minutes. This persistence of the DNA phantom, our energetic duplicate, even in the face of seemingly certain destruction, is very strange. Even if you destroy the coherence in the area where the DNA phantom had been, in this case by the sudden blast of cold, it will repair and restore that coherence once more. The surrounding light will again be organized into the unique spiraling pattern of the DNA that used to be there. Conventional science has nothing to offer us that can explain why this happens, but it does. How long do you think this phantom could have lasted? Amazingly, the DNA phantom remained visible for up to 30 days after it first appeared. Gadeaev could blast it with liquid nitrogen over and over again during this entire time, but it just kept on coming back. As I'm sure you can see, this completely challenges everything in conventional biology, not to mention physics, but it works. This information has been available for more than 25 years now, and the experiment was replicated in the United States by R. Pecora in 1990, but no one ever hears about it. Obviously, the DNA phantom is not electromagnetic. There are all sorts of strange things about it that violate everything we know about electromagnetic energy. However, it does fit in very nicely with what we've been calling the source field. On a microbiological level, it appears that we have an energetic duplicate. Our DNA is somehow interfacing with an energy field that has remained largely unknown to Western scientists, and which leaves behind a phantom that can easily be measured. This means your duplicate is still doing its job capturing light for you, even when you're no longer there. If you're sitting in your chair right now reading this book, and then get up and go somewhere else, your energetic duplicate is still spinning light into tiny little spirals right where you were sitting, within each and every one of your untold trillions of DNA molecules, for at least 30 days after you leave your seat. Since the sizes involved are microscopic, you can't see any of this with your naked eye, but Gadeaev was able to measure it in the laboratory. It's like a perfect hologram of your physical body, which is correct down to the tiniest cell. Now think back to Dr. Ian Stevenson's studies we discussed in Chapter 4. For more than 40 years, Dr. Stevenson collected evidence for reincarnation from some 3,000 children and found that memories, personality quirks, talents, and other attributes carried over from one apparent lifetime to another, including the ability to remember people's names and relationships. And there was a facial resemblance. Dr. Jim Tucker went even further with this research and used facial recognition software to confirm that these children had a forensic match with the people they remembered having been in their alleged past life. Furthermore, let's not forget that lethal wounds from an allegedly prior lifetime often appeared as birthmarks in the new body. All of this can be explained if we assume that our energetic duplicate is not dying when our physical body ceases. It carries over from one alleged lifetime to another and brings our memories along with it. Some of us are able to access these memories directly, particularly when we are children, before we are hypnotized into believing it is impossible by the compelling opinions of parents, teachers, and other adults.